Good morning and welcome to Spotlight on Industry. I'm your host, Sam Mason. Spotlight on Industry is a program where we take you inside our region's manufacturing plants and processing facilities so that we can learn about the goods they produce, where they go when they leave the plant, and the impact these facilities have on our local economies. After a long winter, spring has been a welcome sight. The days are longer, the temperatures are starting to rise, flowers are blooming, and the grass, well, it continues to grow and grow and grow. This month, Karen and I headed just north of the Missouri-Iowa line to the small town of Shenandoah, Iowa, to visit a company that has a vested interest in all things green and colorful. The Earl May Seed and Nursery Company has been in operation since 1919, and it's one that my family has a couple of connections with. Once upon a time, my wife, Andrea, worked in their advertising department for their longtime marketing director, Bill Levere. My other connection is a little more eclectic. In the late 1990s, my in-laws moved from Essex, Iowa to Shenandoah and purchased a home that was pictured on the box in which their grass seed was sold. The company has an interesting history and can attribute its success to the early days of broadcasting. This month, I had the chance to sit down with their current director of marketing, Deanna Anderson, to learn more about the company and their founder. Stick around as we shine the spotlight on industry.
Support for Spotlight on Industry on KXCV KRNW comes from Nottoway County Economic Development, coordinating economic development services for the City of Maryville, Nottoway County, and the Maryville Industrial Development Corporation. Their services include finance and incentives development, site location, industrial development, and small business assistance. More at maryvillemo.org. And from Mazingo Lake Recreation Park, the park provides Nottoway County residents and visitors with an 18-hole golf course, driving range, and a 9-hole junior course coming 2015. More on Mazingo's golf offerings is at mazingolake.com. Support also comes from the City of Maryville, Missouri, offering residents and visitors opportunities in education, employment, healthcare, and recreation, as well as agricultural, industrial, retail, and professional services. More information about the City of Maryville is at www.maryville.org.
Welcome back to Spotlight on Industry. I'm Sam Mason. If you're just joining us, this month we shine the spotlight on the Earl May Seed and Nursery Company in Shenandoah, Iowa. I had a chance to sit down with Director of Marketing Deanna Anderson and their Director of Training, Matt Robinette, to learn about the company. Deanna and Matt, thank you very much for coming on the show this morning.
Thank you for having us.
So first, Deanna, tell me how long you've been with Earl May and what your role is here at the company.
Well, I've been with the company for 14 years and the director of marketing for the last 2 years. Previously, I was the supervisor in that same department.
And then, Matt, tell us a little bit about your role here at the company and also how long you've been here.
I'm director of training, and I've been with the company about 18 years. I've been in this current role for about the last 5 years. So most of my time spent working hand-in-hand with the staffs out in stores. I also oversee our certification program and any company functions that we have.
As I mentioned, Earl May is a name that people, certainly in the Midwest, are going to be familiar with. One of the great things about Earl May is that it's still a family-owned and operated company. Is that correct?
Yes. Earl May's granddaughter, Betty Jane Shaw, is the current owner of the company, and her husband, Bill Shaw, is the CEO. Her son, Gordon Sherman, is director of web development and is also an investor in the company. And then their daughter, Mindy, is also an investor in the company as well.
So tell us about the company and its history here in Shenandoah.
The company was founded in 1919 by its namesake, Earl E. May. He was the son-in-law of a big nurseryman in Shenandoah, E.S. Welch, and founded the company after working for his father-in-law for a few years, decided to go out on his own, and with the help of his father-in-law, founded Earl May Seed and Nursery Company, or May Seed and Nursery Company at the time. And from there, it just grew from a seed company into the nursery products that they have with the trees and shrubs and perennials.
There are many rags-to-riches stories in our nation's history, and Earl E. May's is certainly one of them. Born in 1890 in Hays Center, Nebraska, Earl May dreamed of attending college someday. As a boy, he started a college fund by raising turkeys, trapping wild animals, hunting wolves for bounty, and skinning out cattle that had perished in the brutal Nebraska winters. Upon graduation from the local school, he taught for a while to earn his tuition money and then went on to graduate from Nebraska's Fremont Normal College at the age of 20. He started law school at the University of Michigan, and it was during this time that his life changed. He took a summer job with the DM Ferry Company, traveling the eastern United States on horseback and going door to door selling seeds to farmers. Little did he know at this time that his fortune would be made in seeds rather than the law. Due to the death of his father, he left the University of Michigan after only 2 years to return to the family farm in western Nebraska. He later transferred to the University of Nebraska in Lincoln, where he graduated in 1915 with his law degree. The next year, he married his UNL classmate Gertrude Welch, whose father, as Deanna mentioned, was the president of Mount Arbor Nurseries in Shenandoah, Iowa. After only a few short years, and with the help of his father-in-law, Earl May followed his passion for the seed business by starting his own company in 1919, selling seeds out of a catalog. Their catalogs were really quite the work of art, weren't they?
Yes, they were, and it was something he published every year. He sold everything in that catalog, along with his garden seed. He had some bare root product in there with some fruit trees and raspberry bushes and that type of thing. And then he also had some of his hard good type merchandise in there as well. You could get the car batteries and the tires out of the catalogs as well.
Now, once upon a time, this area in Shenandoah was not only home just to Earl May, but it was home to several large nurseries, correct?
There were several nurseries here in Shenandoah. There was Mount Arbor, of course, Henry Field, which was Earl May's direct competitor, and it was a friendly competition between the two. And then there was Lake Nurseries as well.
Do we know what it was that drew all these nurserymen to this particular valley? Was it just the fact that these were perfect growing conditions nursery materials?
Yes, I think it was the growing conditions, very fertile soil, you know, good climate for growing operations. And I think one started and became successful, and it just kind of catapulted from there.
Deanna mentioned just a few of the more notable seed and nursery companies that called Southwest Iowa home. Others included Radican Seed House, the J.C. Welch Nursery, the Iowana Nursery, the Jackson Nursery, the Farmers City Nursery, and the Armstrong Seed Company. There were others as well, but in the end, most of them sold out to their more established competitors. Of all the notable seed and nursery companies in the region, only one still stands today. Like many startup businesses, the first few years were tough for Earl May, and sales were slow. The staff was small, the hours were long, and the work was hard. But after 5 lean years, the business began to show a small profit. At first, they built the business by writing letters, soliciting customers, and growing their catalog mailing list. But soon, the world would beat a path to Earl May's door by hearing his voice on a new contraption called the radio. I asked Deanna about May's use of this technology and how he used it to his advantage.
At that time, radio stations could pretty much be broadcast throughout the nation, and so you could hear Earl May's voice from several different locations in the company. It really helped catapult the seed catalog business at that time and really grew that catalog business. So he was very good at using that media form to promote Earl May Seed and Nursery.
I'd be remiss if I didn't pause for a few moments to expand on the impact that radio had on Earl May's business. It's important to understand that the first commercial radio station in the United States went on the air about the same time May was starting up his seed business. KDKA in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, went on the air for the first time on August 20, 1920. Wireless, as it was known back then, had been in use for several years in the maritime industry. A few amateurs had been experimenting with it for quite some time, but when the Westinghouse Electric Corporation put KDKA on the air, the medium as we know it really began to take shape. It's one thing to broadcast a radio signal. It's another thing entirely for people to be able to receive and hear that broadcast. In these early days of radio, few people in the Midwest, if any, owned a radio receiver. Audiences would gather in auditoriums, churches, meeting halls, and theaters where crude, home-built receivers and speakers had been set up so that people could hear these strange sounds that were coming out of thin air. By June of 1922, there were only 10 stations in Iowa to which the Department of Commerce had granted licenses. By the end of 1922, there were 500 radio stations in the United States that were broadcasting a signal. Many were owned by newspapers and only served to tease the public with a few lines from a newspaper story, which would drive them to the newsstand to buy a paper. Individuals initially listened on crude crystal sets, but more and more households were beginning to purchase radio receivers, some of which cost as much as $75. Today, that would be equivalent to spending $1,100 on a high-definition TV. Earl May's broadcasting career started in 1924 at the studios of WOAW in Omaha, Nebraska. WOAW was started a year earlier by the Woodmen of the World fraternal organization / insurance company. Aside from reading the news, weather, and crop reports, a radio station had to get creative and develop their own entertainment programming. Groups of performers, musicians, speakers, and instrumentalists from nearby towns would be invited to go on the air. They'd travel great distances in inclement weather from small towns to big cities to perform while the folks back home would gather in public places to listen to their friends and neighbors. A small group from Shenandoah that included Earl May's wife Gertrude was no exception. They were praised for their performance when they got back home, and Earl May himself was eager to take a stab at it. On January 17, 1924, the May Seed and Nursery Company performers drove the 60 miles across frozen dirt roads to the WOAW studios in Omaha. The performance lasted from 9 to 11 p.m., and although he was not allowed to advertise, Earl May did offer a free iris bulb to the first 10,000 people who would write to him. No doubt, these folks were sent a catalog and their names were added to the mailing list. The broadcast was a huge success. In fact, the radio station received more than 10,000 telegrams and letters from listeners who were writing to tell them how much they enjoyed the program. May's group was invited back each month after that, and eventually, WOAW would help May set up a studio in their offices back in Shenandoah so that they would no longer need to make the dangerous trip to Omaha. The signal from the May studio would transmit via telephone line back to the station and then through their transmitter over the air. All of a sudden, the world became much smaller and it would know the name Earl May. In the spring of 1925, the Earl May Seed and Nursery Company received a license to operate its own radio station, but it wouldn't go on the air until later that fall. In the meantime, May announced on his WOAW radio show that his new station, KMA, needed a slogan. He held a contest, and, ever the salesman, the only prerequisite for entering the contest was that the contestants must agree to receive an Earl May seed catalog. As you can imagine, business continued to boom. Finally, on September 1, 1925, KMA went on the air with a variety of programming. As one might imagine, operating a radio station is an expensive endeavor. Modern commercial stations rely on advertising revenue to pay their bills. But in 1925, there was an outdated law on the books that prohibited radio stations from selling advertising. Instead, these stations operated much like a modern public radio station. Companies would support the station financially and in return receive a mention of their name, location, and services. Earl May worked around the advertising prohibition by giving away seed catalogs or holding contests where listeners would write in for prizes. They'd send in their address and would receive their prize along with a catalog. It was brilliant, and it worked. By 1927, May's business increased 425%. The garden seed sales increased 12 times over the previous year. The nursery department sales increased 7 times, and the number of employees tripled. In the first year KMA was on the air, the number of names on May's mailing list topped 1 million. All of this success was credited to the influence of radio. By the way, if you're curious, the winning slogan in the contest was, "The Corn Belt Station in the Heart of the Nation." In 1927, May announced the construction of the Mayfair Auditorium, which was to become the new home of KMA Studios. I asked Deanna to tell us a little bit about the auditorium.
It was actually located right here where we're sitting. that facility burnt down in the 60s, or there was a fire and they ended up and tore it down and rebuilt the corporate offices here in Shenandoah. But he did do live broadcasting out of the Mayfair Auditorium, and they also, you know, held movies and all sorts of things. And it was really quite an elaborate building. If you see old pictures of it, it was very ornate and housed several hundred people. So it was really quite something to see.
It was indeed quite a building. Built at a cost of $100,000, which is equivalent to $1.3 million today, the Mayfair Auditorium seated 1,000 people and served as a broadcasting studio. The stage could be soundproofed by lowering an enormous sheet of glass between the audience and the stage. A screen could also be lowered in front of the stage for the showing of motion pictures. There were electric lights embedded in the ceiling that would twinkle like stars, and a special machine would give the illusion of clouds moving across a night sky. There were archways, columns, and plants that would cascade over balconies. The motif gave the audience the impression that they were sitting in an open-air Moorish garden. The auditorium was built right next door to the seed house and included two towering minarets. Its only design flaw may have been that it was built within a few hundred feet of the railroad tracks. The noise of the passing trains would filter through into the broadcast. By the late 1950s and early 60s, there was no more live music on KMA, and the once grand Mayfair Auditorium had worn out its usefulness. It was torn down in 1963 to make room for May's new corporate offices. With the catalog business firmly in place, Earl May decided to expand his operation and take his seeds, nursery stock, and other items directly to the public by opening his first retail location. Lastly, before we go on our tour, what would you like for people to know about Earl May?
The company has seen a lot of changes over the last 95 plus years. Basically, our foundation has stayed the same. Earl May was so concerned and really wanted to make sure he saw his customers as friends and that they saw him as a friend as well. We've really tried to keep that philosophy going over the years, and I think over the last 5 to 7 years have really began to even express that more with the way media channels have changed and how customers are getting in their information. We really think it's important that our customers feel like when they come into their local Earl May Garden Center that they're coming into a place that's familiar to them and that really has a hometown feel to it. In doing that, keeping our eye on the ball as far as the product that we want to carry, because again, we want to make sure that when a customer gets home that they're going to be happy with their purchase and how it grows and how it performs for them, because that's really what's the most important thing. And if customers are not successful at the home, then they're not going to be coming back to your store. So we really have tried to dedicate all of our time and our effort to continue those two philosophies with customer service and also the quality of products that we carry.
Deanna, Matt, thank you very much for your time this morning. It's an interesting business that you're in. It's a very cyclical business, but of course we're in that time of year right now where people are really into their gardens. It's a great growing season, so we're real happy that you guys have agreed to be part of our program today.
Yes, thank you for having us.
That's Deanna Anderson and Matt Robinette of Earl May Seed and Nursery in Shenandoah, Iowa. Deanna is the Director of Marketing, and Matt is the company's Director of Training. Earl May was a self-made man and a risk-taker. He was a visionary and an innovator who used his foresight and fortitude to shape farm radio into what it is today. Sadly, Earl May died on December 19, 1946, at the age of 58. Upon his passing, his son Ed May took over the helm and would not only continue his father's legacy in the seed business and radio, but also would pioneer a new medium, television. On September 1, 1949, Omaha's first CBS affiliate, KMTV, went on the air. Although KMTV is no longer owned by the May family, both it and KMA are still on the air and still going strong. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, Matt will take us on a tour of the Earl May Greenhouses and Distribution Center. Stick around.
Support for Spotlight on Industry on KXCV KRNW comes from Nottoway County Economic Development, coordinating economic development services for the City of Maryville, Nottoway County, and the Maryville Industrial Development Corporation. Their services include finance and incentives development, site location, industrial development, and small business assistance. More at MaryvilleMo.org. And from Mazinga Lake Recreation Park, The park offers residents and visitors camping facilities for tents and RVs, as well as lakeside cabin rentals. Mazinga Lake also offers boating, fishing, hiking, and equestrian trails. More information about Mazinga is at mazingalake.com. Support also comes from the City of Maryville, Missouri, offering residents and visitors opportunities in education, employment, healthcare, and recreation, as well as agricultural, industrial, retail, and professional services. More information about the City of Maryville is at www.maryville.org.
Welcome back to Spotlight on Industry. If you're just joining us, we've been visiting with Deanna Anderson and Matt Robinette of Earl May Seed and Nursery. Their company is headquartered in Shenandoah, Iowa, as is their primary distribution center and greenhouses. The entire complex sits on 22 acres that once featured their test gardens. Each spring, the company operated a 77-acre test garden that would be filled with thousands of varieties of vegetables, trees, shrubs, roses, grasses, and other flowering plants. Every year, as many as 20,000 visitors would flock to Southwest Iowa to attend the open house and see the beautiful display of color. In fact, the first time I visited my wife's home in nearby Essex, she made it a point to take me out to see the test gardens. I was amazed. I'd never seen so many flowers and so many colors. The test garden program was discontinued in 1994, and a portion of the grounds were used to construct new greenhouses and growing spaces. Matt took us on a tour of the greenhouses and the 55,000-square-foot distribution center to show us how Earl May grows some of their green goods from scratch and how they reach their retail locations. We started by learning about the tree-growing operation. The trees that I see outside the door here, those all started in this building as just a small tissue sample and eventually was nurtured and grown, transferred from pot to pot, and eventually will then sit out here for another 2 or 3 years.
They're ordering, like I said, tissue cultures or plugs, or it might be whips of trees. So it might be a 5-foot stem with roots that started here. But this is where it would start. They'll get in pallets and pallets, literally stacked to the ceiling of just bare root trees. Then they'll tip prune the roots. And then over here, it'd be potted up in, say, a 7-gallon pot. And then it will be transitioned to a 10-gallon pot and then to a 20-gallon pot until it reaches the specs that they have desired for that product. So once it hits the distribution side, it may be, you know, an inch and a half in a 20-gallon pot. That'd be what size tree it would be. So it'll funnel out onto racks and then it'd go outside here where you can see they've got rows and rows of trees that they're growing on to whatever specs they have desired. And that might be a 2 to 3 year process depending on the size of tree. You know, some of them, they only want to grow on to a 1-inch size tree. Some of them might be an inch and a quarter or an inch and a half. We really don't grow anything past up to a 2-inch tree. And when you're talking that inch, that's the caliper of the trunk. So it's basically the diameter of the trunk is what they're measuring. Once it's potted, it'll sit out there in rows. It'll be fertilized. It'll be watered on drip irrigation. And then once it reaches a certain size, it would be upgraded to the next pot size and just continue the process. So some might be sit out there for a season. Others, it might be 2 to 3 years before it reaches the grade that they have desired for it.
And the trees, we're talking about fruit trees, shade trees, all species and varieties of trees?
Yeah. For the most part, what we try to do is supplement what we have troubles finding other area from other growers. And so fruit trees would be one thing that we grow 100% of ourselves because it's tougher to go out and find on the market. Some of our top graft trees, which would be ornamental trees like dwarf Korean lilacs or fruitless weeping mulberries, would be a couple other varieties that we grow out here because we can do it better than anything else we can find out on the market. And then a lot of shade trees where we're just supplementing the quantities that we would sell through as a company.
Some of your green goods are grown from grafts or from other sources, but you said some of these plants come from local sources as well.
Correct. What we actually grow ourselves would be a small percentage of what we actually sell. And so we get plant material, whether that's trees, shrubs, perennials, annuals, vegetables, shipped from us from other suppliers and growers from all over the country. And so we might get product from Ohio or Georgia, Illinois, Oregon, Minnesota. Those suppliers then would ship it in to the Green Goods Distribution Center here. We slot that product, and then again, the stores would order that product, and it would be shipped directly to them once a week.
And you said some of those plants actually come from local growers within Southwest Iowa, Northwest Missouri.
That's correct. Most all of our annuals are finished product as far as containers, hanging baskets. Most all of our vegetables would be from local suppliers right here in Iowa and Nebraska and Kansas.
As Batten mentioned, Earl May only grows a small percentage of the plants that they sell, but those plants have to start somewhere, so the next stop on the tour was the potting operation. This is a gardener's paradise for those that really like to get their hands dirty. There are large piles of potting material dumped onto the floor, where it is put into various sizes of pots that are then loaded onto trailers. These pots will later have the plants added to them in a separate operation. I was curious about the makeup of the potting material, so I asked Matt to describe it.
So it's basically just a loose soil that they have mixed here themselves between compost and like a topsoil. It'll come in big vats or bags, and then they basically dump it out here and mix it themselves. And depending on what they're potting up, they would use different mixes for the plants. You can see like the soil they're using over there. It looks like maybe they're potting up some small fruits. The mix there has more soil to it, where this mix here that they're planting up has a little bit more perlite mixed into it. So this is a finer mix, a looser mix. It's going to stay more airy and not hold as much moisture.
So what I'm seeing on this trailer in these pots, at this point there's nothing in those pots other than just the soil mixture.
Correct. Yep, and then they will go back through with the tissue, whether it's an annual or perennial or whatever they're growing here, and it would be implanted into the soil. These 1 gallon pots here, they're probably going to start today. They'll push growth on them. They may be ready in 6 weeks. They might be shipped out to stores for sales yet this season.
As you can imagine, Earl May won't plant all of their annual and perennial stock at one time. It needs to be staggered throughout the year for optimal distribution to the stores. The way they do this is by either refrigerating or freezing the tissue so that it goes into a dormant state until they're ready to plant it. Matt explains.
Here, they actually moved in a cooler and a freezer. And so what they can do is order in their tissue cultures and put them in one or the other to space out our season. And so it keeps them cool and dormant. And then they can plant them out according to their schedule when they want the finished product to ship to stores. Before we had these, they actually had to plant everything all at one time and then maintain it, cut it back, trim it, fertilize it, whatever, until the dates came that they were going to ship it out to stores.
Once the new plants have been potted, they are moved into one of the growing greenhouses where they are nurtured, watered, monitored, and given the perfect conditions to grow. These are large spaces with row upon row of tables that contain multiple varieties of plants. Large fans keep the air moving, and vents in the walls and roofs help keep the temperature at the proper level.
So this would be one of our growing greenhouses on the annual side of the world. So you can see basically it's just tables and tables of some perennials, some annuals. And so you've got some petunias, you've got some cannas, you've got some double impatiens and coleus. There's some celosia here. Again, they just start them in 1 gallon pots and grow them up to whatever spec they or desire they have for the end result. So, and this is all product that'll be shipped out to the stores here in just the next few weeks.
Do you have a background in horticulture or anything of that nature?
I don't. It's amazing what you can learn just working around it every single day. And really one of the beauties of our industry is that you're learning something new every day. When you're working out in stores, every day somebody comes in with a question that you don't know the answer to. And as long as you're willing to help them and find the answer, they respect that. And really, that's part of the fun of working out in the stores is learning something constantly.
Earlier, we saw plant cultures being put into pots. Not all plants start their lives that way. Many start at the most basic level as seeds that are planted in trays called flats. And then they're put into greenhouses to grow. Matt explains.
So like this is a tray of 105 plugs. So these trays would have been all started from seed. They grow this tray of 105 plugs, and then it's upgraded into maybe a 6-pack or a 4-inch pot. And then from there, if the desired result is to be sold as a 4-inch, they'll just grow it on in that 4-inch pot, ship it out to stores. Some of those 4-inch pots will then be transplanted into a gallon, or they may be transplanted into a hanging basket or a combo pot, and the end result then when it's shipped out to the store would be finished product. And that might be a 10-inch basket or a 12-inch basket, 14-inch basket, something of that nature. But most all of it is going to start in these small flats.
Working in a greenhouse was once hard, back-breaking work, but at Earl May, efficiency is the name of the game. The folks at Earl May really try to handle the plants as little as possible. The pots and flats are set on metal tables that are just above waist height so that the workers don't have to bend over. There's an overhead irrigation system in place so that they don't have to lug around heavy hoses. And, as Matt explained, there's even an ingenious overhead trolley system that can be wheeled to any location in the greenhouse for easy transport.
You can see in this house too, we mentioned that they try to handle product as little as possible and make the whole process as efficient as possible. It's all overhead watering in here. And then you can also see the trolley system that they have set up with those yellow pots on them. Mm-hmm. And so those actually will transport all the way around the entire house here. And so if they're pulling product in this back corner, they just wheel a trolley back there, load it up, and then wheel it back to the front. A lot of other facilities, it's one by one. You're hauling pots from the back corner to the front. And so that's helped to expedite the process a little bit. The other thing that Jason's done here in this house is all the tables are on rollers. And so he can get a lot more product in this space because these tables roll east to west. And so you don't have to have an aisle between every table. You can just wheel the tables one way or the other to create an aisle where you want to go.
Efficiency is also a critical consideration when it comes to keeping the green goods irrigated. Even here in the Midwest, water is a valuable resource, and Earl May does its part to conserve and reuse water in all of their growing operations. I asked Matt to tell us about the system they have in place.
Tell us again a little bit more about that irrigation system that you're using.
Well, here on the growing side, most everything is on drip irrigation. And so every place there's a pot, there's basically a little nipple that water will drip out of as it's being watered. If they would remove some of the pots, then you just put a plug in that hole and it stops water from dripping out of that spot. And so it really eliminates a lot of the waste on the water side of the world. On the distribution side, or in the distribution side, all of our watering is done overhead. On the green goods distribution side of the world, all the watering is done overhead, and the facility's been graded as such that all that water then runs off into a pond, and then it's recycled and used again for future waterings.
And the source of that water is primarily rainwater?
Yeah, rainwater, and I believe there's a well there too.
As we wrapped up our tour of the greenhouses, we headed over to the distribution center where what they call hard goods are warehoused. Built in 1971, the distribution center is the base of operations for Earl May's fleet of trucks that deliver merchandise and nursery stock to their garden centers daily. We had a chance to walk through the facility where we could see a wide variety of merchandise that they had on hand.
This is our 55,000 square foot distribution center. And so this is where all of our hard goods are shipped in from suppliers around the country. And then we have 31 stores, Nebraska, Kansas, Iowa, and Missouri, that would order weekly this product. That's then pulled back out, put on semis, and hauled out to their stores. So
you're separated into hard goods and green goods. As I look around, I see hard goods, I see pots, I see some furniture. What are some other hard good items?
Oh, there's all kinds of soils, there's fertilizers, there's chemicals or lawn solutions, there's patio furniture. You mentioned pottery, there's grass seed, there's bird seed. Some of those products we package ourselves here at this facility. And so really anything without roots, anything that's not alive, would be housed in this distribution center here.
One of the first items that caught my eye as we walked into the distribution center was outdoor furniture. They were these beautiful Adirondack-style patio gliders, chairs, and tables. I asked Matt about them, and his answer really surprised me.
This product that's slotted here is actually Amish furniture, which is made by an Amish gentleman right in Iowa. And so when you talk about local economies and local product, it doesn't get any more local than this here.
And of course, what we're looking at, just for the listener to understand, is these are outdoor gliders in a sort of an Adirondack style, and they look like they're made of an all-weather material.
They are. It's very high quality. In fact, you won't find anything of higher quality on the market, and unique to Earl May. And so, again, it's a high-quality product that you're not going to find in a lot of your other big boxes around the nation.
And you said this is an Amish builder from, is he from Southwest Iowa or Northwest Missouri?
I was going to say Northeast Iowa or Eastern Iowa.
Yeah, that's interesting. I wouldn't have thought that that was Amish made. For one thing, because it's made out of the recycled poly material, I guess I think of Amish making something out of wood. And again, it looks like it would be factory made. I would have never dreamed that that was Amish handmade furniture.
He's got, I don't know if he would have a dozen or 15 different colors that he uses. And so we can special order just any combination that a customer would want. So it's been a great selling product for us. I think this is maybe year three that we've carried that product.
The last area on our tour was the packaging area. The packaging of seeds is very much a seasonal operation, so even though the machines weren't running the day we visited, Matt explained to us the types of products that they package.
This area here, this facility, is where we would package a lot of our private label products. And so private label really helps us stand out amongst the competition. Customers can't price compare Earl May products because they're only sold in Earl May stores, and so it gives us a competitive advantage. And it's all very high quality product as well. So any of our garden seed, grass seed, our pet foods, wild bird seed, all of it's packaged right here in this facility. We can also do custom packaging. And so a lot of times, whether it's municipalities or companies, for instance, like MUD up in Omaha, who's the utilities company up there, or our retail stores will have brides-to-be that come in and maybe are having a wedding and they want to order special packets for their weddings. We do custom packaging for all kinds of scenarios like that. And so those custom runs we're doing all the time. But the lion's share of what we package would be done and shipped out to stores by December of, say, 2015 for our 2016 sales.
Our tour concluded back in the shipping area, where trucks were being loaded with products that were to be sent off to the retail locations. As those trucks move out, new trucks roll in with products that are to be received and warehoused until it's time for them to be sent back out the door and hopefully into your garden, deck, or patio. It was a nice day spent with Matt and Deanna. Most of our time producing this show is spent inside, so it was great to be outside on a nice spring day watching things grow. A day spent in the garden, no matter what size, is always a good one. I'd like to thank my guest this month, Earl May Seed and Nursery Director of Marketing Deanna Anderson and Director of Training Matt Robinette. I'd also like to acknowledge author Robert Berkby, whose book KMA Radio, The First 60 Years, was a tremendous source of information for this story. Join us next month as we head to St. Joseph, Missouri, where we'll visit with Pete Gray of Gray Manufacturing. We'll learn about his company's long-standing history of building hydraulic lifting equipment for the automotive, heavy truck, and service vehicle industries. Once again, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next month as we shine the spotlight on industry.
Support for Spotlight on Industry comes from Nottoway County Economic Development, Mazingo Lake Recreation Park, and the City of Maryville. More information on all of our sponsors is available at MarylandMO.org. Spotlight on Industry is a production of KXCV-KRNW and Northwest Missouri State University. Our editor and producer is Karen Lawrence. For more information about how your company can be featured on Spotlight on Industry, please contact Sam Mason at 660-562-1163.